Cast. Presented by XFL2K.com. With your host, Tron Hawkins.
Welcome to This is the XFL Podcast. I'm your host, Tron Hawkins, and this is the first episode of the new year. It is 2020, and it is XFL time. Can't believe it's finally here after 2 years of waiting, but here we are. This episode is going to be the last of my team previews. It is about the New York Guardians and the Seattle Dragons. And now, after this, it's time to look forward to the rule book and mini camps. Or, I'm sorry, training camps. Yeah. So, I mean, it's getting there, guys. It's getting real. When you think about the New York Guardians, you have to think about the new head coach of the Guardians and general manager and offensive coordinator, Kevin Gilbride. He's the only coach that is calling his own plays in this league. But he's been a very successful offensive coordinator. He was offensive coordinator for the Giants for both their Super Bowl wins over the Patriots. And he helped Eli Manning become pretty much a Hall of Famer thanks to those two Super Bowl wins. So since he can do that with Eli Manning, what is he going to do with players like Matt McGloin? That's what we're going to talk about in this half of the episode with the Guardians. I think he's a great coach. He's a great XFL coach. He's been through it all. He's won two Super Bowls as a coordinator. He's also been a head coach for the Chargers when they had to pick Ryan Leaf. So, I mean, he's not had many opportunities as a head coach after that, but I think he will succeed here. The one thing about the Guardians is, though, I think they put together a pretty good team, but are they at the level of D.C. and St. Louis? That's the question you have to ask about the Guardians. I think D.C. is the clear favorite in the East. However, if St. Louis's quarterbacks struggle, which is a possibility since they have two young quarterbacks and Matt McGloin's more experienced, I won't be surprised if the Guardians is in the Eastern Final. But that's why we play the games. We're going to find that out very, very soon. My only nitpick about the Guardians is their stadium. MetLife is humongous. So it's going to look weird on TV, even though they're just selling out the lower bowl, having 20,000 people in an 80,000-seat stadium. But I feel a little bit better about it knowing that they're just going to do the lower bowl, because if they're going to try to sell out the whole thing, it'll look like a mess. I get why they're in New York, though. It's the biggest market in the United States. And they do love their football, if they're winning. And that's going to be the key. Like, the Jets and Giants were both awful this year, and they couldn't sell out even if their lives depended on it. So if the Guardians come out winning, I can see them getting 15,000 to 20,000 seats, filled for their games. Speaking of their games, let's talk about their schedule. The crazy thing about this schedule is, because you can tell that they're a big market team, they only play on ESPN one time. All the other games is either on Fox or ABC. Except for Week 10, it could be ABC or Fox Sports 1. So Week 1, they host the Tampa Bay Vipers on Fox. Week 2, they go to at DC and the Defenders on ABC. Week 3, they go at St. Louis, and St. Louis is home opener. The Dome's going to be rocking for that one. And you're going to tell a lot about the Guardians in these first three games. They're all division games. And if you look at it, though, Week 2, 3, 4, 5, and 6 is all tough games based on what we know roster-wise right now. At the Defenders, at the Battlehawks, they welcome L.A. to MetLife, at Dallas, and at Houston. Really, I'm sorry. At Dallas, and then versus Houston in New York. Excuse me. And then Week 7, they play the Dragons on ABC. And Week 8, 9, and 10 is a reverse of Weeks 1, 2, and 3. They play versus St. Louis at MetLife, versus D.C. at MetLife, and then at Tampa. Again, you're going to find a lot about this team Weeks 2, 3, 4, 5, and 6. If they can split those or even better than that, we got a contender on our hands. It all comes down to the quarterback play. It also comes down to the fact that can Kevin Gilbride do both offensive coordinator and head coach. He is the only coach that hasn't hired an offensive coordinator. But when you've done his offensive coordinator as long as he has, you can get away with stuff like that. After this, we're going to look at the team that he has put together that might become a contender in the East. Of course, the first player we're going to talk about is Matt McGloin. He'll be 30 when the XFL season starts in February, which gives the Guardians a steady veteran. I agree. As Mac Mitchell says on XFL board, he wrote this piece about their draft recap. He's one of the older quarterbacks in the league, really. Matt McGloin is. In 2012, he won the Bullsworth Trophy, an honor and award given annually to the most outstanding FBS college football player who started out his career as a walk-on. It is hard to be a walk-on in college, much less at Penn State, a big-time program like that. He ended his playing days at Penn State with 46 touchdowns, which ranked second in school history, and that's a lot of history there. He went undrafted, but he came to the Raiders and started. He was third string, started out. He ended up starting for them and including throwing for the second most yards per game by an undrafted rookie. And he actually started a playoff game because David Carr, who was an MVP candidate, got hurt a couple weeks from the playoffs. Then their backup got hurt, and then he got thrust into it against the Texans, and they got destroyed. But that's not on him. I mean, can you imagine being an undrafted rookie and then, bam, get thrown into a playoff game? I mean, nobody could succeed under those circumstances, I don't think. It says McGloin held his own, but he was never cast as the lead actor, but always seemed to play his part well when called upon. It says Kevin Gilbride's offense will be a mix of his own experience and philosophies and that of his assistants, G.A. Magnus, quarterbacks coach, and Mike Miller, wide receivers coach. Gilbride will be his own offensive coordinator, will initially call the plays. Gilbride has run and shoot roots, but his offense over the years have been a mix of spreading teams out and playing in run-heavy sets. McGoin has the ability to adapt on the fly and improvise if need be, but he can also stay within a game plan if called upon. It's why teams trusted him to come out of the bullpen in the NFL. McGoin always seemed to operate his best when things broke down around him, which unfortunately was very often. McGoin's teammates in the draft will help dictate the offense that he operates within. Every one of the 70 players drafted has varying experience in the NFL. So, Gilbride went very experience-heavy. He wanted guys with NFL experience. That's why he probably put McGoin down as his QB1 that got assigned to him. Unlike most teams, not everybody had NFL experience on all these other teams. I mean, there's ones that did, but not everybody. So he made sure he got veterans that knew what it took to win football games. In phase one, he said the Guardian strategy for their offensive skill players was a unique one and fit Kevin Gilbride's hybrid offensive style. New York attacked the wide receiver position early, picking up four wide receivers in the first five selections. And said, just in case you thought Gilbride was going to go back to his old run and shoot days. The second half of the draft, however, focused mostly on the ground game and a two tight end set with Bibbs and Tolbridge. Remember, this is the draft recap. Some of these guys, is possible, could already be on practice squads. I'm just kind of going off this because it's kind of hard to get an updated, roster as of now. So I'm just kind of going off it. Gilbride even added a big, strong-armed mobile quarterback in Marquise Williams who can be asset during games if needed in specific short yardage or conversion situations. Williams is talented enough to lead the entire offense if need be. Like the ref talked about on our year-end show, Houston's probably going to run two quarterback sets. I mean, they're not two quarterback sets, but they're going to use Connor Cook and probably Phillip Walker. I can see this being the same situation here in New York. This is going to be a versatile offense that shifts personality in-game. The three backs, Tim Cook, Justin Stockton, and Darius Victor, all different running styles. Cook is powerful, no-nonsense inside runner. Stockton has playmaking ability in the run and pass game. Victor is a shifty back who can make people miss. This backfield harkens back to Gilbride championship offenses in New York that features a committee like Ahmad Bradshaw and Brandon Jacobs. The Thunder and Lightning. I see a lot of people having Thunder and Lightning running back situations in this league. You're going to have big, powerful backs and shifty ones. The backfield's position coach was Gerald Ingram, who is now back with Gilbride with the Guardians. So they all have spent – all the coaches that worked together before and knows what it takes to win championships like they did in New York. And those Giants teams weren't the best teams in the NFL. They just got hot at the right time and knew how to complete games. And I think the Guardians could do that too. Mikael McKay is a big 6'4" target who can win in the red zone, very similar to that with what Petco Burris was for Gilbride. It's not hard to see the hints of the Giants' offense here with the types of playmakers selected. Gentry is an ideal slot receiver. D'Angelo Yancey can be the centerpiece of this passing game. I love D'Angelo Yancey. I think he could be a big fantasy guy when we find out how fantasy works it is. He has always had the physical tools. He's going to get a real shot to be featured receiver in this offense, but I expect a lot of different players to be utilized. It's going to be a multiple-style offense. When it comes – now, they already cut one of the brothers from Alabama, Kujundio. They already cut one of them, so I'm going to kind of skip around here. But like he says, when your name is the Guardians, you better have good protection up front. That is textbook by the numbers, drafting a professional starry offensive line from 1 through 5. So the Bama brothers, one of them got cut. They've had a rocky career. But with the way this team's going to run the ball and need and need time for McGloin to throw the ball. They're going to have some big hog mollies up front. Especially if they're going to run the ball as much as I think they will. So defensive front seven, it says, no surprise here that Jim Herrmann coordinated defense would have drafted a linebacker first. I'm sorry, Jim Herrmann coordinated defense would draft a linebacker first. After all, he played inside linebacker for legendary coach Bo Schembechler's Michigan Wolverines. Herrmann would go to the defensive coordinator of his alma mater, winning a national championship in 97. So again, he has championship experience like Gilbride. And receiving the Frank Broyles Award as top assistant coach in the nation. He coached linebackers his whole career, including stints in New York with the Jets and winning the Super Bowl with the Giants. Again, another Giants coach. Ben Heaney fits the bill of getting the nod as the quarterback of the defense. The issue with Heaney has always been his ability to stay healthy. The Guardians went heavy on defensive line, literally and figuratively, drafting seven linemen, including experienced space eaters in T.J. Barnes and Joey Mubu early. DeJuan Hines at linebacker could be the steal of this group. He is very athletic and extremely intelligent. A four-time academic All-American at Houston, Hines originally started out as a QB and wide receiver before transitioning to safety. He's going to be a stud. There's going to be a lot of these guys that's, you know, can be a Swiss Army knife in this league. He was a late bloomer in college, was all AAC. Hines was on three different NFL teams in the last year. He was cut by the Chiefs last month at cut down day. There's untapped potential here in a lot of these players and a lot of talent in this player. Hines could be emerged as one of the better three down backs in the league or backers in the league. I think the XFL is just a big league of just untapped potential if you look at it. But this team specifically, if these guys click, they're going to be trouble for the XFL teams, especially if they are well coached as we think they are. This coaching staff has won championships together. Watch out. I think they're actually probably got the most championship experience on their coaching staff here in the Guardians. Defensive backs. New York drafted seven corners in this phase. You could argue that the best pick was New York had in their entire draft was Jamar Summers, as he was one of the top corners in the AAF earlier this year. Last year now. He surprisingly missed the cut in the NFL despite being ranked so highly by Pro Football Focus. Summers will be an NFL corner in 2020 if he plays well or better in the XFL's wide-open passing league. That's why they drafted so many corners. In this league, you're going to have to shut down the passing games. You're not going to be able to stop anybody, but you can damn sure slow them down. And this team slows them down and then runs the ball, and Matt McGloin makes the big throws that I think he can. Watch out. New York then followed up the Summers pick nicely with a true Bohawk and Lorenzo Dawes from Tulane. Awesome pick. I like him a lot. The corner tandem could be one of the league's better ones, much like how New York did it by receiver in the skill draft. The team drafted three state corners with distinctive roles. David Rivers is a small school player with big talent. He could very well play inside or out and move Dawson to the nickel position. If these guys can shut down other teams and play good offense, New York could be the champion by the end of the year. So now we're going to the open phase. It said in theory, this is supposed to be to fill out the bottom end of the roster, players 41 through 71 in camp. The Guardians drafted 30 players in this phase, 15 on offense, 14 on defense, and a quality long snapper in Notre Dame, Scott Daly. The issue for this brief moment is that Daly has no one to snap the ball to. In the Guardians plan, I reimagine fourth down and never punting or field goal. They're kicking a field goal. They need to kick the ball off, though. Looks like New York took advantage of the openness of this phase of the draft. There were no rules in place for specific position drafting in this portion of the draft. So New York decided to load up on many offensive and defensive players they wanted. Two of the better open draft players selected entirely were fullback Tommy Bohannon and wide receiver kick returner Quadri Henderson, which I think he got signed to a practice squad, if I'm not mistaken. The position of fullback was de-emphasized somewhat in the pro and college game, but the few teams that do utilize it well benefit. Bohannon is one of the better fullbacks out there, and he was last seen probably paving the way for Leonard Fournette during his great rookie season. It says Henderson is a game-breaker and useful gadget player and could be an X-factor in the league's new proposed kickoff. Conclusion, the New York Guardians were a team in name only prior to this draft. The players are finally alive. Now they are officially a football team. I think, you know, this team, when they got Matt McGloin, I wasn't too keen on him originally. But the more research I did on him, I realized that he's a veteran, that he can win, and he's been through worse situations at, like, Penn State and with the Raiders than this. He's finally getting a chance to be the bride instead of the bridesmaid. With a coach like Gilbride, obviously if you put him down on his list of players he wanted to sign to him, he sees something in him, something that he's probably seen in Eli Manning. He thinks he can win with him. I think he can win with him. The question is, can this team gel together and do the game plan that Gilbride puts out there? This is a quality coaching staff with championship pedigree. And these players, if they can tap into their potential, they're going to be championship players too. I think the Giants, Giants. I think the Guardians have a legit shot to be a championship team. The question is, though, can they overtake D.C. and St. Louis? I think they can. I still got St. Louis and D.C. being the Eastern Final, but don't be surprised if the Guardians in that come April. So the last team of the team previews is the Seattle Dragons, the team that won favorite team. I'm pretty sure, I think, favorite uniform, if I'm not mistaken, and favorite stadium on our XFL year-end awards. Actually, I think they won the most, if I'm not mistaken, awards. They have a very rabid fan base, and from what I hear, they've sold a lot of tickets to the Link in Seattle. First, let's talk about Jim Zorn, the coach. He's a local Seattle guy, played for the Seahawks, Seahawks legend in the Ring of Honor as their quarterback. A lot of people, though, remember him for what he did with the Washington Redskins, and that might be unfair. Looking back at it now, the Redskins is a horrible organization, obviously, to work for. But looking at the team Zorn put together, I think they're going to be a really, really good team and really hard to deal with. And even XFL delivery guy picked Seattle to win the championship. So there's some fans out there that think they're legit, and I'm one of those guys. But we're going to find out week one. And we'll talk about that here in a minute. Let's talk about the Link. That's one of the loudest stadiums in the world, or the loudest stadium in the world. You get 20,000 people in that bowl getting loud and in people's faces, and Seattle's winning games like I think they can. That place is going to be insane for the XFL. I mean, when Seattle got picked, that was one of the teams I'm like, wow, Seattle and Tampa were the two I was kind of taken back by when they got picked. But now I take that back because the way they're selling tickets and as crazy as their fans are going to be, they're going to have a legit fan base in Seattle. Let's talk about their schedule. Week one, they open up the first week of the first game in the new XFL at the DC Defenders. What a game to kick that off with against a team that I think has championship aspirations and the team I picked to win the championship in DC. Week two, they host Tampa in their home opener. And then week three, they play the Dallas Renegades on Fox at CenturyLink. Week four, they go to St. Louis in the Dome, which is going to be popping. And then week five, I will be there live to see this team against the Houston Roughnecks. Can't wait to be out there with the ref to see that. What a game it's going to be live there in Houston. Can't wait to see the Dragons and Jim Zorn and then play live. Week six, they play the LA Wildcats at CenturyLink. Week seven, they play the Guardians at CenturyLink Field. Week eight, they go to Dallas. Week nine, they go at LA, and then they finish off the season week 10 versus Houston. They're another team that is on some good channels. They're on ABC one, two, three, four times. They're on Fox back-to-back weeks. On ESPN once, and then Fox Sports 1 twice, week 8, 9. This is going to be a fun team to watch. We're going to talk about that in a minute, but I cannot wait to be there live, week 5, when they go against Houston. I love this team. I like Houston's team. I'm going to have a good time seeing them, too. Just go to war. Just can't wait to feel the atmosphere there at TDECU Stadium. And I'm really excited to see the Dragons play. We're going to talk about their players here in just a second. So I'm going to do some quick hits on some of these players I like for Seattle. The quarterback I signed was Brandon Silvers. I love Brandon Silvers. I said I really wasn't expecting to get Brandon Silvers here, but boy, was I excited when we got him. This is from XFL Board. This is, Jackson Connor. He had a 71-29 touchdown interception radio from 2014-2017 at Troy. He also beat, don't forget, LSU in Death Valley. While his AFF stats were solid, 64% completion, 799 yards, 4 touchdowns, 2 picks. And he gave the Memphis Express life to the previously lifeless team. The Mississippi State was a one-win team, and Seward made his team go toe-to-toe with two of the best teams in the AAF, the Apollos and the Commanders. Zachary Garten charted Brandon Seward's accuracy in the AAF, and it was fairly impressive. He charted Seward as 70% accurate, 77% short, 67% medium, and 47% deep. Seward threw short 43% of the time, which set up great for Seattle's weapons that they got. Overall, I think Silvers will get the job done as Dragons quarterback and should be able to go toe-to-toe with anyone. I think he will be the second or third best quarterback in the league. I love Brandon Silvers. I drafted Trey Williams. Williams will be electric for the Dragons and definitely handpicked by Mike Riley. Mike Riley was the head coach for the San Antonio Commanders, so he sent him up close. Williams averaged 5.0 yards per carry in the AAF, and I expect him to be used in Alvin Kamara type role for the Dragons. He should get plenty of work both on the ground and in the air, and will be a centerpiece of this offense. They drafted Kenneth Farrow, another Commander running back. Farrow was Williams' running mate in the AAF, and actually handled bigger role than Williams. He had 106 carries for 372 yards. I would expect Farrow to take Mark Ingram role and be a good 1-2 punch for Williams. That's that thunder and lightning I'll be talking about all the time. Fred Ross with their first wide receiver taken. Ross bought out for Mississippi State, catching 199 passes, 2,528 yards, 22 touchdowns, and a little over 3 seasons worth of games. Ross is a good athlete, and he runs a 4.51 40 at 6'1", 213 pounds. After watching some highlights, Ross possesses sneaky big play potential and has an inside jack to be number one wide receiver. They also drafted local kid Kenan Reynolds. When Reynolds was another player that was drafted previously in the NFL draft, albeit for a sixth round. Reynolds briefly played for 3 NFL teams, with his hometown Seahawks being the most recent. Reynolds, who is a converted quarterback, projects to be the starting slot receiver for the Dragons, 5'9", 190 pounds. He'll be another target for Silvers over the middle, that short passing game that we were just talking about. Reynolds is a very slippery runner, and he could get an opportunity to be a return man if he's not a starting receiver, he'll be a guy that they will manufacture screens or end arounds for. Kasen Williams, when they weren't picking Commanders, they were picking former Seahawk guys. Williams has bounced around to a few training camps, but he had most success in Seattle, where he flashed during the preseason. Williams has really good hands and showed his ability to make spectacular catches with the Hawks, but surprisingly was cut and could not stick anywhere. Kasen will compete with Fred Rawson to play out on the outside. It'll be interesting to see the second chances this kid can make. Overall, this team will be an advantage in the fact that four of these players are really familiar with Mike Riley's offense. They had some good players like Malachi Jones and some of them drafted, but they left, so did Jason Morrow. Farron Williams should be major contributors to this offense, but don't be surprised if a player from the open phase works in here. The rotation for wide receivers is wide open. Ross and Williams are big-bodied outside receivers, and Reynolds will be a gadget top/slot player. The offense should be pretty balanced, but it all come down to Brandon Silvers. I think this offense is in safe hands with Brandon Silvers. We'll talk a little bit about phase two here. The first pick was Isaiah Battle. He was drafted in the fifth round supplemental draft by the St. Louis Rams. He went on to play for 3 more teams before being waived by the Panthers in May. Battle should start the season at Dragons left tackle and should have big duty to keep Silvers' blind side clean. Menzel Bolware with their second pick. He's 6'3", 306 pounds. He originally played for the Tennessee Titans, but then transferred to Miami. With an 18 season. Bolware has the capability to play both guard and tackle, but is listed as a guard to start the season there. Dylan Day, the Mississippi State product, was their first center selected in round 3. Day went undrafted in 2015 draft, but he did play for 5 NFL teams and won a Super Bowl with the Broncos. MyHopReport.com had this say about Day: intelligent with strong competitive streak, rarely bust on tape, and is assignment oriented. Good vision and anticipation of the twist and games up front. Can come off the block quickly to pick up twist or blitzer. Thick through the middle with good bubble. plays with desired toughness at the point of attack and is a fighter in tight quarters. Not always pretty, but get guys blocked. Day is the favorite to start as center for the Dragons in February. Cyril Richardson, offensive guard. Richardson has the most NFL experience out of all these linemen so far. He was an All-American for Baylor in college and got drafted in the fifth round by the Buffalo Bills in 2014. Richardson started 4 games for them and signed with the Bears in 2016. Richardson is also the fifth San Antonio Commander on the roster as he played under Mike Riley. Again, get guys that you're familiar with like New York did. Richardson is a powerful blocker and should move piles for the Dragons in the run game. Quintarius Eatman, a heralded recruit. Eatman played his college ball at Southern Florida and was a key cog in the offensive line that helped Marlon Mack, who's now starting quarterback for the Colts, run for 1,000 yards in 2014. Eatman signed as an undrafted free agent with the Raiders, where he saw limited action. Eatman also participated in the Spring League in 2018. Eatman will battle for the starting tackle job for the Dragons this winter. Michael Dunn, offensive tackle. The Maryland product was a versatile lineman for the AAF Birmingham Iron this past spring and got signed to the Dolphins shortly after it folded. Dunn played both guard and tackle for the Iron and was a top-10 run blocker in the AAF. He will battle for the starting job across the line and should end up contributing to the Dragons team. Some big dudes up front to be blocking for these great running backs. Kirk Barron, center. Barron was an undrafted free agent out of Purdue and has been on both the Dolphins and Bengals. Barron is explosive. He ran a 5'9 and can dunk a basketball, but was not able to be given a true shot yet. The athletic center will get his shot to prove himself with the Dragons and will hope to lock down an interior line spot. Jordan Rose is a Spokane native, played for University of Idaho, and was Sun Belt honorable mention his senior year. He's 6'6", 315 pounds. He'll battle for resistance of the O-line with some of the other later-round picks. Robert Myers was a fifth-round pick in the 2015 draft by the Ravens. He played for 3 more teams over the next 2 years and played for Memphis Express. Scout Report and Bleacher Report said that Robert Myers is a solid technician. Myers wins with footwork and toughness in the trenches and in space. Then finally, Craig McCordle, offensive guard. He's 6'5", 290-pound lineman. Played 30 career games at Cal University of Pennsylvania. That's weird. McCordle was extremely productive in college as he anchored a really good O-line and earned first-team all-conference honors his last 2 years. He'll have to battle for a roster spot, but has versatility, which should help him. Before I record this next segment on the defensive front seven phase for the Dragons, I want to say that I messed up. It was actually J-Dash who picked Seattle to win the championship, not XFL delivery guy. So shout-out to J-Dash for on a year-end review show. He picked Seattle to win. I thought that shocked me. I'm sure it shocked a lot of y'all when he picked them. So with that out of the way, let's look at round one of phase three, the defensive front seven draft for Seattle and Stanley Mponga. Gosh, some of these guys have crazy names. The 28-year-old edge rusher from TCU was drafted in the fifth round by the Atlanta Falcons in the 2013 draft. Mponga went on to play for three other NFL teams before getting drafted by the Dragons. A scout report by Wes Duvay of Bleacher Report said, "This about Mponga. Despite being somewhat undersized, he plays with power. He can be seen driving offensive linemen backwards, and he has rarely overpowered himself. Mponga's pass rush repertoire includes a variety of moves to get to the quarterback, though only 6'2". Mponga has long arms and strong, active hands that show up in both the run and pass games. Being their first selection in the Dragons, the Dragons probably intend to make Mponga one of their primary pass rushers." So you can't fault the Dragons for picking somebody that has NFL experience like he has. Nick Temple was their second pick. The Bearcat linebacker is another former Commander player as the Dragons keep loading up on four-year bases from Mike Riley. Temple is a shorter 5'10" linebacker, but he has extremely productive at Cincinnati. He bounced around between the NFL and CFL playing with the Commanders and the AAF. While he may be smaller, Dragons fans will love Temple as he will fly from the sideline. From sideline to sideline, and be the captain of this Dragons defense. Will Sutton was the third pick. Huge guy. Sutton was a 3-star defensive tackle coming out of high school and committed to Arizona State. He flourished at ASU. He was an All-American and Pac-12 Defensive Player of the Year in 2012. He was drafted in the third round by the Bears, which is where most people know him from, and played 3 years there. Sutton followed up with recent in Minnesota and San Francisco. Last spring, Sutton played 8 games with the Hotshots in the AAF, where he posted 15 tackles, 1 sack, and 2 pass knockdowns. Sutton was the first defensive tackle drafted by the Dragons and will be a key cog in the front seven. So their first three picks
With some fast guys.
And some guys with experience. See, I like what they're doing on defense. Next up is Tini Palpoi, defensive tackle. The second team all Pac-12 selection recorded 74 tackles, 12 and a half sacks for loss, and 74 tackles, 12 and a half tackles for loss, and 6.5 sacks at the University of Utah. They're going undrafted in 2014 draft. Palpoi signed with the Chargers, but lost his full 2015 season to injuries. 2018, he joined the Bills camp in the offseason. Like Sutton, Palpoi played in the AAF and was a key part of the Salt Lake Stallions' run defense, which was the best in the league. Again, their scouts must see something like in each one of these guys, know their experience. They're not picking, you know, guys that's never been in the NFL. All these guys have been in the NFL and had some success at some level of football on the defensive side on the front seven. Jacquee Smith, defensive end, was the fifth pick. The former second team All Big 12 selection bounced around between the NFL and CFL. Again, another guy that's been in both leagues. Sailing to Tampa Bay in 2014, Smith recorded 17 combined tackles, 13 solo tackles, 6.5 sacks, and 1 forced fumble. For the 2014 season, only 8 starts. Smith struggled with injuries in the next few years and bounced around to a few more NFL squads. Now Smith is looking for an opportunity with the Dragons and will hope to be an impactful edge rusher this spring. None of this league is second chances for guys that's been in trouble, but also second chances for guys that can't stay healthy, and he's one of these guys. Steven Johnson was the 6th-round pick in the defensive front seven draft. Johnson is one of the oldest players on the team and in the league, is just as hungry. Johnson had no college offers coming out of high school, so he enrolled in Wyoming Seminary. Johnson started to catch some college scouts' attention with his 62 tackles, 2 picks, and 4 rushing touchdowns in 5 games. Yes, he did all that in 5 games. Unfortunately, Johnson tore his ACL and LCL in what was a career-threatening injury. He rehabbed and rebounded by walking onto the University of Kansas football team. In his career at Kansas, Johnson recorded 225 total tackles, 3 sacks, and a pick. He went undrafted to 2012 and made the 53-man roster on the Denver Broncos, starting 7 games over 3 seasons. After 6 seasons, Johnson signed with the AAF Hotshots and had a pick 6 in their opener. Johnson should provide some great leadership on his team, given his experience, but make no mistake, he is here to compete as well. This is the kind of guy you want on your team. He don't give up. I mean, his career could have been over, walked on to a major college like Kansas, and then played 3 seasons for the Broncos. I mean, that's one amazing career he's had. In the 7th pick, they picked Tanila Tupou. Another local product gets a shot with the Dragons as they drafted Tupou in the 7th round of the front 7 draft. Tupou attended Archbishop Murphy High School, played for UW football and the Seattle Seahawks, so he's familiar with Seattle. Tupou started a game at fullback for the Seahawks, was drafted as a defensive tackle for the Dragons. Tupou also played for the AAF's Arizona Hotshots and recorded 5 tackles and a sack in a game for them. Tupou looks to be a big run-stuffing role this spring. Again, another guy with NFL and AAF experience on his team. You know, Coach Zorn is an offensive-minded coach, so I'm sure he's like, look, to his defensive coaches and scouts, just get me guys that know how to play defense, and I'll do the rest on offense. I'm pretty sure that's what they did, if I'm being honest. These guys have some crazy names. Danny Ikizua was an honorable mention All Big Ten linebacker and defensive end for Purdue and signed to the Eagles as an undrafted free agent. He saw action in the preseason for the Eagles but could not stick there long term. He did not receive a combine invitation, but still posted impressive numbers at his pro day. He ran a 4.68 40-yard dash, posted 26 reps on the bench press, and had 31 inches on his vertical and 117 inches on his broad jump. He has a real chance to be a solid pass rusher for this team. Passanoi Tasini was the next-to-last pick in this round. The 6'3", 307-pound DT from Utah was selected with a not pick in the front seven draft by Seattle Dragons. He recorded 35 tackles, 1.5 sacks, and 2 forced fumbles, and 6 pass breakups in college. He spent time between the Cardinals, practice squad, and active roster for 2 years, and now looks to make an impact on opposing teams' run games come February. Again, NFL experience was important in this draft. And finally, Praise Martin Ajukak. He was born in Abia State, Nigeria, and moved to New Jersey at age 10. He went on to play college football at Temple. He recorded 124 tackles, 20 sacks, 12 forced fumbles, and 4 fumble recoveries, and 6 field goals and an interception. He spent the 2018 summer with the Miami Dolphins and the 2017 summer with the Cardinals. He'll hopefully be a part of the Dragons' pass rush rotation. Again, they did fantastic with the pass rushes, I think, in this part of the draft. So next, I'm going to be talking about a couple of the defensive guys that the Dragons got on the back end. I ain't going to talk about everybody. I'm just going to talk about the guys that got spotlighted on the XFL draft page. We really some really good names, especially the first one y'all are going to know about. The first guy in the defensive backfield is Chris Davis. In case you wonder where you heard that name before, he is the man who did the pick six. He's notorious for the kick six return touchdown in Auburn. He spent 2 seasons with the Chargers, primarily as a returner, obviously, and special teamer. He plays a tough and physical brand of football and has the strength to beat up receivers at the line. He shows good zone awareness and then coverage and offers return versatility. He's one of the Swiss Army knives I've been talking about. He is going to do kick returns, punt returns, and probably play some defense. I think he's awesome and worth the first-round pick. Kendrell Bryce was a 4-year contributor at Louisiana Tech. He went undrafted but played in 36 NFL games with the Packers, including 14 starts. He's good size and explosive tackler. He can play from single high where he displays very good reaction quickness. All these guys are experienced and are winners, if you haven't noticed yet. Steve Williams, cornerback, California. He was a 5th-round pick by the Chargers in 2013. He played 33 games in the NFL and was most recently a regular contributor in the AAF. He is a very good athlete with outstanding movement skills. He closes on the ball very quickly. He can play inside or outside. Jordan Martin, for Syracuse. He's a former college cornerback and safety. He had a tryout with the Jets before earning a role as a starter in the AAF. He has a good height, weight, speed combination. He has extensive experience playing single high coverage and can bring hit power as a downhill run defender. Finally, we have Sterling Moore, cornerback from SMU. He carved a 7-year NFL career after going undrafted. He played in 82 games, including 7 playoff games, and was one of the 2011 AFC Championship Patriots team. He offers a versatility lineup inside, outside, or as a hang defender. He is a smart player and flashes outstanding ball skills. So that's all for the Dragons. I think they have a good team. They have a very good defense, especially the front 7, and a couple of guys in the back end. They got good offense with running game and Brandon Silvers and some of the wide receivers they have, and Jim Zorn leading the team. The thing about both these teams, the Guardians and the Dragons, are they're both kind of sleeper teams. I don't think anybody's picking them, and that's good. You know, when people sleep on you, you can kind of stock out of nowhere. So these are two teams that's going to be in the fight, I think, for maybe a 2 seed in their respective divisions. But watch out for both these teams, especially with their quarterbacks and their respective coaches. They know what they're doing. They got 2 good quarterbacks and 2 good coaches for each of, you know, each of these teams have a good one of each. So they're sleeper picks for sure. Thank you for joining me on this episode. Training camp is now officially underway. Can't wait to talk about that. We're going to talk about the rules next episode. I'm going to be the first ever live and unedited version of this podcast. I say live. It's going to be live to tape. I'm going to record it the night the rules come out and then release it instantly. It's going to be a wonderful episode. Cannot wait to break down the rules. Check us out on XFL Podcast on Twitter and on Facebook. Check out XFL Newsroom on YouTube. Join our Discord. Check out the year-end video we did with J-Dash, XFL delivery guy, and the ref from XFL Newsroom. Thank you. Happy New Year. Happy 2020. And we're getting closer and closer to kickoff.